57-yarder for the Super Bowl. Ball put down. Right-footed kick is up. End over end, arching up, and it is caught! He got it! The Rams win! The Rams are going to the Super Bowl!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
That's Greg Zuerlein sending the Los Angeles Rams to Super Bowl 53 a little over a week ago on the road against New Orleans. Kevin Harlan, Westwood One, giving you the play-by-play call. Remember, you will be able to listen to Super Bowl 53 right here on KOAL this Sunday. Live coverage is going to begin at 12 p.m., kickoff set for 4:30. I say we talk about Super Bowl 53 right now. I am thrilled to bring in our next guest. He is very familiar with the Los Angeles Rams organization. In fact, he played quarterback for the Rams from 1986 to 1993, had stints with the New Orleans Saints and also the San Diego Chargers. He was a Pro Bowler in 1990, and he played his college football at Purdue. Joining us right now over the phone, we have Jim Everett. And Jim, it is a pleasure to get you on the show. I'm really looking forward to the conversation today. Thank you so much for the time.
Oh, you bet, George. I know we were just talking a minute ago. I know your heart bleeds blue and yellow, and you know, having a chance back in the day play and then have our team come home, and now they're in the Super Bowl. I mean, just pinch me, would you?
And you know what's funny? About 4 years ago, I had someone ask me the question, would you rather have the Rams win another Super Bowl in St. Louis or have them move back to L.A.? At that time, it was, hey, move back to L.A., absolutely. But now, just 3 years later, are we going to have both? That right there is kind of surreal.
It is. It is real, you know. When they first came here, I had no idea. I mean, I knew they had some talent, but they when McVay walked in the door and they made the move over to Jared Goff and brought in Woods and signed some real football players like Whitworth, Sullivan, and you know, and then Les Snead's doing his draft, and of course, on the defensive side, what they did with their, you know, they tried to create a dream team. And I think if I remember, and if we all remember at the start of the season, they're like, oh, they got too many personalities with Marcus Peters and Tlaib in the corner. They won't be able to control the locker room. I mean, I remember hearing all this stuff about just the, you know, you'd call about negative press, or you know, saying it's not going to work. This is just how teams. And all of a sudden, you know, here we are. We're playing against Tom Brady and his Bill Belichick, they're in there year in year out. But maybe it's the time for the Rams to be in there year in and year out.
No doubt. And you know, let's go back to the first year back in LA, because when the Jeff Fisher led team, Jim, there were some problems, to say the least. It was still exciting to have football back in LA, but when Sean McVay is named the head coach of the Los Angeles Rams, I know that a few people knew about Sean McVay, but he's such a young guy and he's taking over for a grizzled vet and Jeff Fisher. What was your initial thoughts on the announcement that Sean McVay was going to be the guy in Los Angeles to lead this team?
Well, first of all, going to Jeff Fisher, I like Jeff Fisher. I think that Jeff Fisher, you know, kind of runs the Buddy Ryan type, smash mouth type football. I think that it was hard for Jeff to maintain some sort of offensive continuity, which made it hard for the draft guys to pick out what guys do you need to run your type of offense, because there really wasn't one. It was kind of a makeshift or, you know, and so I think when it was time for Fisher to go, and I think that was appropriate time, I think there was a real focus on saying, you know what, the Los Angeles Rams, to be successful, need to have an offense that's state-of-the-art. And I think that was one of the things that Kevin Dimoff looked at and said, you know, this is what we want to do. We don't want to be, you know, we don't want to go back to, you know, caveman age offense. We want something that's going to be hip. It's going to be something people want to come see in Los Angeles. It needs to be exciting. We want to, you know, we need good players, and so there was a real focus on that. And then when they had the interview with Sean McVay, it was like, this guy's a guru. And I think they probably took some risk, but the fact that he could also communicate. There's one thing about being a smart individual, but then also knowing that, hey, I'm humble enough to know that I'm maybe not the smartest guy in the room, but he'll say that on a humble way. But, you know, he goes and gets Wade Phillips. He does good things, being a young guy, surrounds himself with even smarter guys. gives them all the credit, but there's no one that works harder in the NFL than Sean McVay. And the Rams did have to take a risk to take a young guy like this and say, hey, will he be able to communicate with some players who are older than him?
Well, and I think you mentioned a couple of the moves, going out and signing Robert Woods. Last year, a trade for Sammy Watkins. This year, a trade for Brandon Cooks. Andrew Whitworth has been instrumental on that offensive line, anchoring it at left tackle. It just seems like when McVay took over, he and Les Snead, they put a puzzle together, exact pieces. Because I remember the Robert Woods signing. A lot of people thought this organization overpaid for Woods. And really, I think you can make the argument he's most complete wideout in football right now.
Okay, well, Jordan, it happened for a reason, and a lot of people don't know what happened behind the scene when Sean McVay first came here. He sat down with Les Snead, and he wore him out. He sat down, and he went through a description of each one of the positions, what he's looking for. And a coach that has that vision to be able to say, I want my left tackle to be, kind of big, this size, I want to be able to do this, I want to do this with my offense, these are the things I'm going to look for. I'm throwing my bubble screen, so I need him to have some athletic ability. I want my guards to be this, I want my center to be this, I need my one receiver to be like this, two receiver to be like this, three this, because he knows what he's going to do. So when they're out there, now Les is armed with this information, not only for looking for guys in, say, free agency, but in the draft. So when a guy like Cooper Kupp comes up in the third round, he's like, that's exactly what I need for my number three receiver. So they know exactly what they're looking for. It's not guesswork. It's not like, oh, well, this guy runs 40 faster or this guy jumps a little bit higher and you're doing all these, unmet. I'm like, I want a player that can step in and play and do this role. That's how Bill Belichick has been successful for 17 years. He knows Bill Walsh up in San Francisco. They plug and play different guys because they knew exactly what they wanted. And guys would come in and say, hey, this is my role. This is what I do.
I know he's not a Sean McVay guy per se, but I remember seeing a tweet from you. Oh boy, it had to have been 2 years ago. You were talking about Tyler Higbee. And on the show yesterday, we were discussing kind of the hidden players in the Super Bowl. For me, one of them is Tyler Higbee. And look, if we go back to the NFC Championship game, Jared Goff had the most important completion of his career to Tyler Higbee in overtime, faced with a blitz with Cam Jordan right in his face. What was it that made you say that about Tyler Higbee?
I like Tyler Higbee. I think that he's a good player. I mean, I think he's a third or fourth round pick. I think he fell down the draft board a little bit because of some of the stuff he had. I think he's a talented player. Now, there's one thing when you come out of college and you're 23, 24, whatever age you are, and, are you going to be a pro's pro? I mean, there's some guys that graduate from high school, and they're pretty good. But are they willing to work harder and be the best college player? Some five-star guys don't turn into five-star NFL guys. There's some three-star high school guys that turn into, NFL prospects. So it's that work ethic. And that's the part with Tyler Higbee. He has all the pieces. So does Gerald Everett. I mean, they've got two guys that can be pretty dynamic. But going back to your point on that play with Jared Goff, just to get the ball out, I was listening to Peyton Manning break that down. And, those are the types of things that when you look at quarterbacks and say, does he have this ability? Does he have this sense? Does he have all these things? You can't coach that. That's just God-given talent that Jared can do.
Yeah, he was fantastic in that game. I know there's a million different storylines you can talk about in the NFC Championship. I think one of the things that's been neglected, Jim, he outplayed Drew Brees in the NFC Championship, and that's saying something for a kid that's only in his third year and only been a legitimate starter for two.
Well, I don't think that being on the West Coast sometimes that a lot of the press picks up on what's going on over on this side, unless your name's Joe Montana or Steve Young. But it's like he played extremely well. He's going to need another game where he plays extremely well and error free, and that's going to be key. And he does a good job. And some of the other things when you look at this, Jordan, you'll see him throw the ball out of bounds and throw it away. He knows the play's not there. There's some other younger guys that would take that, can I fit it in? I need that chance, and then throw the pick and come back and go, I need to learn from that. Jared doesn't have that. He's been through some tough waters over in Cal. He's been through a tough first year. He knows exactly what McVay wants. It's that communication skill coming through again with Sean McVay and Jared Goff saying, I don't want you to throw a 50-50 ball for a 5-yard game. if we're going to throw a 50-50 ball, it's going to be for the 55-yard touchdown. All right? So if that ball's not 90% completable, you're throwing it away. And that's what he does. I mean, I'm not saying he's robotic, but I'm just saying he's quick with that decision.
Jim, there's so much more I would love to discuss with you, including your playing days, if you have time to hang around with us for one more segment.
Sure.
Fantastic. We have plenty more coming up on Drive Time Sports. Our guest right now, former Los Angeles Rams quarterback Jim Everett. We'll talk about his playing days when we return and continue to count down the days to Super Bowl 53 right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
First and 15 for the Rams at the Giant 30. Everett goes deep. Touchdown to Willie Anderson. And he doesn't even stop. He's headed for the locker room. The Rams win it. Anderson burned by Mark Collins. And this place got very quiet very quickly.
That's Jim Everett connecting with Flipper Anderson in overtime of the 1989 divisional round. Rams topping the Giants 19-13. We actually have Jim Everett joining us right now over the phone. We'll talk about that play and more in just a bit. But Jim, a question for you as we get the conversation rolling once again. When the Rams left for St. Louis, I've heard several players say it was almost as if their history had been zapped. And not only players from the Rams organization, but I've heard this from players from other franchises who have relocated. Is that kind of the vibe that you got when the Rams left for St. Louis? And what was it like when they returned to L.A. 3 years ago?
Well, it's a good question because I talked extensively with Jack Youngblood about this, and we actually had a little bit of time where we moved away a little bit from, Ram Nation a little bit. I mean, when they were in St. Louis and didn't get a chance to really participate, weren't asked to this and that, but after they won the Super Bowl and a couple years after, there was a gentleman named Kyle Evergert who's done a tremendous job of bringing back all the alumni in one Ram Nation, and eventually they moved back to Los Angeles. It wasn't because they were reaching out to us because they were. That was where the NFL Legends program is kind of starting. But the fact that, I was, the Rams, I'm still in the Rams all-time leading passer, and the way golf's going right now, that's going to be up in a few years for sure. But, for them to say, oh, you hold the records for the St. Louis Rams, it was kind of like, I don't even know, I haven't been to St. Louis except for a drive-by to go to school in Indiana. But, it was different. For them coming back to Los Angeles, it was huge. This Los Angeles area was teased with the NFL for 21 years. I mean, every time a team wanted a new stadium in their city, they'd say, well, we're going to move to Los Angeles. And we'd be like, so we'd put on our Jacksonville Jaguar hats and go, hey, how do the Los Angeles Jaguars sound? We would go through this, and then all of a sudden, no, our stadium referendum went through, and we don't need Los Angeles. And so we did that for 20 years, and it was kind of wild. And then the fact that our home team is going to come back, we never thought that. That's like, lightning striking. Now, I certainly feel for the people of St. Louis because we have been in the same boat. We lost the team. They left. I was playing for New Orleans at the time, so it was kind of interesting playing my whole team. But, at the time, now St. Louis loses the team over technicality because of the contract. And I feel for the people of St. Louis, and I get it. I mean, the kids there don't get to see the Rams. The CBS and Fox TV and, Mid-America probably doesn't show Los Angeles teams playing. They're going to show Kansas City or the Chicago Bears or, whoever else in the Indianapolis Colts.
Again, Jim Everett joining us right now, former Los Angeles Ram quarterback. Jim, there's three offensive plays, being a Rams fan, that are my favorite plays I've watched a million times, okay? So 1979 divisional round, Vinny Ferragamo finds Billy Waddy across the center of the field against the Cowboys in the divisional round. I could watch that play all day. Of course, Kurt Warner connecting with Isaac Bruce in Super Bowl 34. But I honestly have to say that one of my favorite plays of all time, it's you finding Flipper Anderson in the divisional round against the Giants on the road. It's a Bill Belichick defense and a Bill Parcells squad. You find him in the end zone in overtime, and he keeps running through the tunnel. I have to ask you about that play, if you can walk me through it.
All right. So we're playing the New York Giants. We're underdogs. The week before, we just were underdogs again. It was a wild card game the week before against Philadelphia and Reggie White and Jerome Brown. And all the great players they had in Philly. And they, you know, it was funny. I was introduced at the Philly Ram game here this year. The crowd was Philly fans, and they were booing me. I was like, hey, they're introducing me, but I'm getting booed. I'm like, oh, those are Eagle fans. I get it. Anyway, even after all these years, Philly's still booing. But when we go play at New York, there was always a rival. They had Lawrence Taylor. Of course, I'm going to be doing a brunch with him over in Atlanta here on Sunday. So it'll be nice to, you know, be around him a little bit on a non-playing basis. But the fact that we're playing this team and we're underdogs, and we just, you know, it's kind of like the fact that, hey, there's only us rallying for us, because that stadium's brutal. And so we play them pretty close. We get a turnover at halftime. But at the end of the day, we push them to overtime. And, you know, we finally get the ball and we call. It was just 8:44 lucky. It's a play that we can have max protection if we need it. We crossed the 50. We knew Belichick was probably going to bring a blitz, knock us out of field goal range. Because at the time, if you just make a field goal, you win. And so we kind of anticipated they were going to run the blitz. They did. Their safeties in one of the Belichick types defense back in the day were always too deep. Well, when they blitzed, they had to play man-to-man, and their corners weren't as good, and we knew we were going to be better. So we were prepared for it, and then Flipper caught the ball and just ran through the tunnel. And I'd never heard a stadium, especially New York, so quiet. And it was so cool.
Yeah, what was the locker room like?
Oh, it was fabulous. We were just, you know, jumping for joy. I thought, you know, it was one of those seasons that you know, you feel like you can beat anybody. I know the next week we played San Francisco, who we'd already beat two times before. And, you know, to have to beat a team three times in 1 year is, you know, really tough. But in the locker room that moment, it was the best football feeling I've ever had.
I was going to ask you, in comparison to the game with Flipper where you throw for 455 yards, Flipper breaks the single-game receiving record, which still stands today against New Orleans, also on the road. In comparison, how do they compare?
I think team-wise, winning the playing in the championship, every quarterback, and I never had a chance to play in the Super Bowl. I really wish I did, but I think every quarterback's dream. I remember when I was in Kansas growing up and Lenny Dawson was my favorite. He always wanted to win a Super Bowl. You don't remember the guy who took second, even though I know Jim Kelly. But and he took second a few times. But I think that, you relate to winning. You go to horse races and you bet on who takes first. You don't even remember the horse who came in second. And that's kind of how we are. And so I think you want that to happen. But, it's a great sport, and it's, competition is the best. And going back to being first, second, the Rams overall in general, I think, haven't got much respect with the lineup they have or with the talent they have. But I think that's going to change come Sunday.
That was going to be my next question. Just a couple more for you. On paper, logistically, I actually like this matchup. And I went back and forth with my co-host on this. I honestly preferred New England over Kansas City. And to a lot of people, that sounds bizarre. Jim, break it down for me. Do you like this matchup on paper?
I do. I mean, of course, New England going to Kansas City and beating them is a pretty darn tough thing to do. So kudos to New England. I mean, they really did. But, did they spend it out by doing it? I don't know, because the fact that, I don't think New England can handle the two interior pressures that we have, and they have their quarterback does not have Russell Wilson, Mahomes' moving ability, which really puts a lot of pressure on your defensive secondary. Doesn't mean that the quarterback's not great, because he is. He gets the ball out quick, and they're going to know that. But they also know he's going to be at point A. He's not going to be point C, point D, point Z, all these other different places where these other, Dak Prescott's will be. So that point changes. So, they could kind of pin their ear back and come. Now, how they try to counter it is with White and do the dump-off passes. So a lot of pressure on our linebackers, like there was with Kamara, to cover the dump-offs off and not make sure that they don't go for, 15, 20 yards. And if you contain those, correct me if I'm wrong, but they don't have the deep threat that we have.
No.
They would love to have Cooks.
Right.
Had to get rid of them because they weren't going to pay him $16 million. We were because our salary cap's good. Mm-hmm. But Belichick tried to replace Cooks with another receiver. It didn't work out. You know, he's had personal problems, but they don't have someone to take the top off, and that's a big difference between these offenses.
Jim, I got one more question for you, and I'll move away from the NFL for just a moment. Still to this day, you are the only Purdue quarterback to ever beat Michigan, Notre Dame, and Ohio State in the same season. I got to throw that out there because I don't know if that's ever going to happen again. Does that mean anything to you?
It does. I mean, those are three prominent programs in our land
yeah.
to play the game of football and to have a chance 1 year. And I had some great teammates and we did some cool stuff and we were kind of cutting edge offense. And it was one of the things that I looked at when I came to the NFL. I came from offense that was like Brohm is doing there at Purdue now. He is state of the art. So when I came to the NFL, it wasn't hard. It wasn't like I was having to do all this new stuff. Matter of fact, it was kind of a lot more basic. It wasn't until Ernie Zampezi came in the next year it means a ton to me. Are you kidding me? Every time I come back to my reunion with my guys, and I eyeball them. Matter of fact, I was just talking to them on the phone the other day, and a lot of them, and we were all talking about getting back together. But, yeah, they're my brothers.
Yeah, that's awesome. I figured it did. Had to get your perspective on it. And then lastly, you're going back to Atlanta this weekend. You get to be kind of an ambassador for the Los Angeles Rams at the Super Bowl. I know for Ram fans, Los Angeles Ram fans all over, that means a lot to have you there. I think it's fantastic.
I am. And I'm actually an ambassador for the NFL alumni as far as trying to take care of some of the things that are going on. I mean, I know we have a collective bargaining agreement coming up. I know there's some older guys that, you know, have health issues, have this and that. And I just want there to be a spokesperson for them as well. And I've kind of taken that on and saying, you know what, I think the game is big. It's not a millionaire game. It's a billionaire game. And I think that, you know, I'm not asking for handouts. I'm just saying let's take care of our own first and make sure that the guys that were the ambassadors early on in their career don't have it, you know, as hard. And it'll transfer to the guys when they retire as well.
Jim Everett, former Los Angeles Ram quarterback, such a pleasure to get you on. Jim, before I let you go, I know you're always very very active with the fans, especially on social media. Anyone can give you a follow on Twitter. I know you love going back and forth.
But let me give this caveat: when you follow me on Twitter, take it with a grain of salt because I'm all over the place. I try to stay away from politics, but I'm way into fun. At @Jim_Everett, you know, anything goes. Yeah, I talk about Rams. I also love the Saints too. I spend a lot of time there. So I mean, when the championship game this year was really a hard pull for me to see either side. So you know, I'll talk about the whole gamut: NFL, this or that, you name it. Give me a follow. If you take Twitter a little bit serious, I may follow you back.
Jim Everett, what a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you so much for the time. It was an honor to speak with you.
All right, George. Thank you so much. Horns up.
That's great stuff. Former Los Angeles Rams quarterback Jim Everett joining us here on Drive Time Sports. We are out of time on this packed Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports, but we will be back to do it again tomorrow. Leonard Marshall, former New York Giant defensive end, won two Super Bowls under Bill Parcells, and his defensive coordinator was Bill Belichick. Looking forward to that conversation tomorrow. A big shout-out thank you to Jim Everett and Coach Morgan Warburton. Be safe. We are out.